A quick note for our listeners. This Radio Parkies presentation is sponsored by YOPN Network and includes people who have been living with Parkinson's for quite some time. The vocal challenges that you hear are due to the progression of this disease as well as deep brain stimulation surgeries. And we come as we are here. Everyone has a purpose and a contribution, and everyone is welcome. Thank you for listening.
You are unique, active, determined, resilient. You are not your diagnosis, and you are not alone. This is Young Onset Parkinson's Network. We believe young onset Parkinson's disease does not define you. You define it. We are a safe place to learn, connect, and engage within a supportive community that actually gets it, because we've got it too. Welcome to Young Onset Parkinson's Network. Living well starts here.
We'll be back with a full interview in 30 seconds.
Boys and dogs are ready to rumble. Wait on the streets and here they're gonna tumble. Blades gonna flash on the street, flames clash on the town when you ignite.
I'm happy right now, but people think I'm angry all the time, because Parkinson's took away my smile. Sharko was founded with one ambition in mind, to bring back smiles for people with Parkinson's. There are currently 10 million people who are diagnosed with Parkinson's, and it is the fastest growing neurodegenerative condition in the world. Despite the best available medical and surgical interventions, many people remain frustrated with their symptoms. Sharko's goal is to improve the quality of life for people with Parkinson's. Sharko has been working extensively with the Parkinson's community to understand the problems faced and identify the solutions needed. The movement symptoms of Parkinson's can truly limit daily life. Going for a walk, writing a letter, taking cards out of a wallet, or making a cup of tea can become a real challenge. Taking medication on time can also be difficult, as people with Parkinson's often have complex regimes with serious consequences when medication is not taken on time. People with Parkinson's have checkups with their specialists roughly every 6 to 12 months. As symptoms are not easy to describe or measure, it is often difficult to explain how their symptoms have been over the last year or more during their short consultation period. This often results in inefficient use of time for both people with Parkinson's and their clinicians. To help address these issues, Sharko has created the Q1, a non-invasive wearable device for people with Parkinson's. Coupled with the Q app, it aims to improve quality of life by reducing Parkinson's movement symptoms, giving medication alerts, and tracking the qualitative and quantitative symptoms of Parkinson's. Worn via a medical adhesive patch, the Q1 uses two therapies, focus stimulation and cueing, both validated through years of research. Focus stimulation is the vibratory stimulation of a peripheral area of the body, while cueing is the delivery of a repetitive stimulus to the individual. They have been shown to improve the motor symptoms of Parkinson's, such as slowness and stiffness of movement and freeze of gait episodes. The Q1 also incorporates medication alerts delivered to you discreetly at the time most convenient for you. With the accompanying app, you can also track your symptoms and progress throughout your day. Developing medical technology with and for people with Parkinson's. Please join the Sharko community today.
Welcome to the YOPN Network podcast. We're joined here by Lucy Zhang and Heather Kennedy, also Mike Koalia. And we've got a very interesting person here to learn from. I understand that you've got a really cool device that is going to make some changes in the Parkinson's community, already has for many people. And before we discuss the device, I kind of want to ask a little bit about yourself. Who's Lucy? Where are you from? And what are you all about, Lucy?
Well, thank you so much for having me today. I am calling from Madrid, actually, today. We are actually based in Cambridge, UK, but we are out in Madrid to meet with some people with Parkinson's and really spreading out, actually. So just a little bit about myself. My undergrad, I did informatics design. It's really looking to user experience and using technology to improve quality of life for people with others. I then went on to master's course at Imperial College and Royal College about doing innovation design engineering. And then is when I really started getting into medical device, medical technology, and also system renovation to improve the quality of life for long-term conditions specifically. I've been working in motor symptoms mostly. So the conditions like paralysis or people who had strokes, MS, and so on. Parkinson's is something that I really got into from 2013 because of people I've met. One of the first gentlemen that I met back in 2013 for the research purpose was saying, because he's got Parkinson's, although he's really happy, he can't smile anymore because of his face is stiff and now everyone thinks he's angry. And at that time, I was yet to understand Parkinson's really well. After like talking with him and working together with him on the research projects that we did, then really quickly realized that Parkinson's is such a challenging condition that really affects in various of way for individuals who are living with Parkinson's, but also around them. And at that time, what I realized is actually there's a lot of things that technology can do to improve the quality of life for those who are living with Parkinson's and also people around them, including the healthcare providers. So that's how we started from a research project. Then we were initially looking into micrographia, but then it was the device that we've developed then was really helping people write better. We really wanted to learn a bit more about how is this impacting movement for people with Parkinson's, which led to the device that you and Nathan are talking about the Q1 device.
So, and that's really what brings us here to talk to you, Lucy, is that Q1 device. It's very, very interesting. Just as a very brief explanation for our listeners, this is a sternal device. It's a something that goes on your chest and it has vibrations. Can you give us a little bit of a theoretical background on why does this work?
Of course, that's a great question that it was years of study for us to actually look into why is the stimulation improving the movement for people with Parkinson's and also what kind of movement is it helping, to what degree can it help? So the device that we have developed, as you mentioned, it's a wearable medical device that is non-invasive. It uses adhesive to sit on the sternum, and with one button press, it delivers a stimulation that we have been studying over like multiple years together with researchers and people with Parkinson's, clinicians, and so on. So as you mentioned, is how does this work was the key questions that we wanted to answer. As a researchers, the most important thing is like working on the efficacy and finding out what is the reason that is helping people with Parkinson's have improved motor symptoms. Two phenomena is the key things that we're looking into that the Q1 device is delivering, which is high frequency focused vibrotactile stimulation. It is like in a simple term, it's giving a mechanical stimulation in a particular body part that is non-invasive. The second part is the cueing. Now, you might have heard about the cueing more than focused stimulation. So I'll go a little bit more in depth with the two phenomena. So first is to start with the high frequency focused vibrotactile stimulation. What we are seeing for people with Parkinson's is increased beta oscillation, so beta wave in their brain activity. And this affects the motor symptoms for people with Parkinson's, especially with the stiffness, slowness, rigidity side of movement. So what we were able to see in the research is that by using focused stimulation that is high frequency, and that is the key part of what kind of frequency are we using, we were able to see the decrease in beta oscillation, which then results in fluid movement for people with Parkinson's. Now, why is that the case? So that's kind of physiological kind of results that we were able to see and something that we're constantly looking into. Why is this work? The framework that we're working together with Professor Kilner in Queen's Square that we've been studying together with is that with the beta oscillation increase, people, the body is basically in a state that is comfortable. It's not in a ready to move status. So by providing focus stimulation, by decreasing beta oscillation, we put our body into a ready to move status. So that's what we are currently working on and looking into more in depth, because we want to increase the efficacy of the device more and more.
So the vibrations of this device help with the waves of the brain that have been dysfunctional with Parkinson's disease. Is that correct? In a very simplified.
Yes. So that is correct. But instead of saying help, I would say it affects the beta oscillation. So that's exactly the lay term that explains it really well. The other part of the cueing, which you probably have heard about, either counting 1, 2, 3, which we would call a cognition cueing. So you're thinking about 1, 2, 3, or the visual cueing. I'm sure that you've heard about like laser cane or laser whooping or auditory cueing, where you give a metronome kind of beeping sound, for example. They're all giving some sort of stimulation cueing. And what the cueing frameworks works on is the bit deep part of the brain, which is basal ganglia, have lots of functions. But one of the functions that it has is regards of providing rhythmic movement. So initiation of movement or continuation of the movement. But because of basal ganglia is affected by Parkinson's, we basically lose natural rhythmic movement. So what the framework says is that by providing rhythmic movement, which is cueing, we are helping individuals to follow that. So we are bypassing it. What we would say is that we are bypassing basal ganglia, stimulating the motor cortex directly to provide guidance for individuals to follow that rhythm. So this actually particularly goes a lot with, for example, freeze of gait. So when people get a freeze of gait, or before they get freeze of gait, we'll be asking them to concentrate into the movement and follow the steps towards to that. So that's the cueing part. What we were able to see is by combining these two phenomena into one device is when the efficacy really started increasing, not just with the improvement of motor symptoms, but also, not only like stiffness, slowness, and also the walking part, but a lot of holistic kind of improvement in their motor symptoms. So we are constantly studying though, because we believe that understanding what parameter of stimulation that we give and also the positioning of the device, depending on what stage or the symptom domination that individuals have, to calibrate the stimulation so we can constantly look into how can we make the device work for individuals more and more.
So that collaboration, to be able to calibrate, I'm sorry if I can speak correctly, that device, is it reading the waves of the brain in real time and then making adjustments?
Not at the moment. That's a great question, because we are actually developing Q2 and Q3. So next generation of the device, we are already building the algorithm to do that. At the moment, the Q1 device is a very simple device that delivers stimulation. Individuals can calibrate stimulation themselves, and we intentionally let them do that within the range of the device will work, because in the literatures, you'll be able to see when it's under a certain frequency, it's not going to work. Or if it's over a certain frequency, it's not going to work. So we have a range that is going to majoritarily work for individuals. But within there, they can calibrate the amplitude, frequency, and the pattern of the stimulation. What we are doing in the back end is that we are looking to what kind of stimulation that individuals are seeing the most benefit. And we often go to them and also calibrate together with them. And all of this data is going into our next development, as what you mentioned, Nathan, for like a smart device that understands your symptom and provides a stimulation accordingly.
This is beautiful. This is amazing. Thank you for devoting your life into this realm for us. I think Heather and I both like people who think outside the box. And that's one unique thing about what you're saying is, most applications for Parkinson's are basal ganglia centric. And even within the brain, you thought outside the basal ganglia and then brought up a device that is applied to the dermis. Heather, outside the box thinkers, we like those, don't we?
Yes, indeed. And I have a little bit of a left field question for you. I've been reading about how AI can detect Parkinson's and how the new AI model through the MIT has written some things, as you probably know. And I see that you guys, and when I say you guys, I do mean specifically Charcot Tech, has been sponsored by incredible, the University of Cambridge gives you their blessing. Let's just start there, the EPDA. I mean, we could go on and on. And so I immediately have some trust for your process. And I love how you're saying there'll be future generations. This sounds a little bit like we'll be waiting in line for the next iPhone, because I see there's a line to get in line for this. How available will this be to patients and when?
That's a great question. I have to say that I'm actually really excited because it started from like 10 years ago, which is like, I think it's actually very soon our anniversary of Charcot. But when we first started, there was really not that much study or technology into Parkinson's. So it was quite like a new area. So we had to do a lot of kind of digging ourselves. But it's really exciting that, as you mentioned, Heather, like there are so many studies coming in. Technology is really like getting there to improve the quality of life for people with Parkinson's by symptom monitoring, symptom tracking, identification, and the interventions. So I think that's really exciting, I have to say. When is it going to be available? It's a combination of not only technology, but also regulation. I have to say that technical-wise, if I may say, it's not that difficult because, as you mentioned, AI and machine learning have been developing so quickly. I'm sure that, you know, with ChatGPT and everything, everyone is excited of how it's going to change. But also at the same time, of course, they are concerned about some of the aspects. But at the moment, when it comes to motor symptoms especially, there are lots of things that current technology can do, if that makes sense. The sensors that we currently have in our mobile phone on like a Apple Watch or Samsung Watch, they are capable of doing so many things and they're very, very sensitive. Building algorithm that is meeting with the purpose of supporting Parkinson's is another story. And we are also actively working on this. And once again, I think it's exciting that there are lots of people getting into this sector because it means there are more effort, there's more literatures. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, like here together, I have to say. So I am always inspired by new studies coming out. If I may say that we actually got the first kind of review of looking into detecting motor symptoms, and it's almost like getting close of getting there. But then regulation side comes in that we have to prove the safety and the efficacy kind of the things. And as a medical device manufacturer and R&D center, I do really actually want to advocate in a way of the regulation, because regulation is actually very, very important, despite it is one of the things that we have to go through. But without the regulation, the patients won't be protected. So the reason why we have FDA, why we have, you know, the MHRA as one, is because they're looking into efficacy, they're looking into safety of the device. But Heather, I'm sure that you've got something to mention about that.
Well, I just want to say how big of you to advocate for the all these middlemen who are doing the protections, because it slowed you down a decade almost. Like since 2013, you've been working on something. It must be maddening. Also, I saw Ex Machina, so I know what's coming with AI. I don't mean to make a terrible joke, but I'm sure you saw that movie. I mean, how it ends, how, you know, we're all worried that AI is going to take over.
So, I agree. Like there's a lot of discussion with the AI and it's how we use them and how we kind of train them and so on. But at the end of the day, just on this AI topic, I'm sure lots of yourselves will be interested, is that I went to one of the two and I think this was the most inspiring and most sensible explanation of where we are going with, you know, AI and also AI used in medical technology and health tech is, it's almost like a child. We can try our best to teach themselves and give them a good things, but we never know how they're going to grow. And we're going to have to always constantly think about that. So yeah, but Heather, thank you so much for saying that, because like, I think it's wrong for us to feel like regulation is a hurdle. It is actually necessary to make sure that we are working ethically, because at the end of the day, it's to protect the wider community.
Does this device work with DBS?
It's a great question. And it's one question that we get asked a lot. And thank you for giving me opportunity to, Heather, you did get a DPS. How are you feeling?
I don't want to derail our conversation. That's a longer question.
I would say Heather's very interested in your answer.
Yeah.
I would love to have a chance to talk to you a bit more about it. So thank you for the question. DBS companies make their device and they go through safety testings and everything. Charco does all our safety testings, but when it comes to device together, we have to do compatibility testing together with clinicians and also the test house. We are yet to go through that, but we are working with the companies to ensure that we can do that. Then we'll be able to provide further information on that. There are a couple of people who discuss with their clinicians that I do know, and we will be updating people who have got the same question as you mentioned as we find out more.
Can you tell us what your instinct is on that, Lucy? Do you think that it will work?
So when you say, will it work apart from the safety? We actually had a great discussion with some of the specialists in Parkinson's, where there's like that too, I have to say. So one side was saying that they believe that it is quite similar to how TBS works in a less kind of like it's more subtle way of delivering similar things. So they said it may be using the same pathway, so it won't be additional. However, there were actually other side of the party who were saying, no, actually, I think it will be on top of the benefit because of it is actually looking into overall symptoms. So I think it's a debatable topic we are constantly discussing. If you ask me, I think there's a potential for sure because we have some literatures where they talk on top. And if you look into our studies, we actually did all the testing on top of our, that they were usual medication status, if that makes sense. So people who are taking their medication, we use the Q1 and it's an additive benefit rather than replacing anything. So we believe that there is a potential, but we're going to have to see more and we obviously disclose as we go.
So we're talking about two different types of stimulation, similar technology because they're both providing stimulation on that very basic level. One is directly into your brain and yours is using the dermis, using the neuronal connectivity we have through the rest of our body to affect the brain. What made you think outside the brain in that way, thinking I can create a device that doesn't even attach to the brain that affects the brain? What made you think in that direction?
I have to say, I'm not going to take a credit because it's massively thanks to people with Parkinson's that we worked together with. So as I mentioned, my undergrad very much goes into user experience, user interface, and really understand the ergonomics of individuals. So the research of kind of working together with people is the key part. So when I started the project, I talked with lots of people with Parkinson's to just understand what are the challenges, but also at the same time, what actually helps them. And there were a gentleman who was talking about every time he gets really stiff and rigid, he would go on a massage chair and it really helps him. And I thought that was really interesting. But then it wasn't just once. I kept it like, Heather, did you have any similar experience?
I have a plate that I can stand on that shakes. And I also use Beats, like you mentioned, to move every single time I get stuck. It's the only thing that unsticks me. Or a vibration that comes through. It's called a smoothie ring. It has metal things in it that bounce. And it causes vibration in my arm. So I'm saying, I've already done some of this on a very small level. So I'm so excited about this because I respond to these Beats. And it works similarly in that we do the dual tasking that Darby Schlosser likes to talk about. It keeps part of our mind busy while we execute these tasks. It's brilliant. It's like EMDR in many ways, you know, but it's a physical version of that.
That's one of the beautiful things about our community. If you can take anything and say, this is kind of cool. We with Parkinson's get to have a subjective experience about what works and then watch the science prove us right. And that's what Heather's describing there. I have the same vibration plate and it helps a ton. What is it about vibration? Why does vibration rule our life so much?
So I think like this is all great because exactly what yourselves are mentioning is that we collected all of this and we started getting curious. And I think that's the part of the shock we get really curious about by listening to people when they say it helped them, even like temperature when they say, well, if the temperature was, like some people say, when it was too cold or too hot, it affects their symptoms. We look into why would that be? Regards to answering your question regards why is vibration affect us a lot. It's a study that we're doing quite a lot, and I'd love for you to join one of our R&D discussions, but it's the frequency and the stimulation that we are impacting. It's actually like, it's a very simple thing, but when we think about our whole body, like everything actually goes down to the frequency and the hertz. And so, for example, the vibration that we currently have, as I mentioned, it was almost designing the frequency. It has a lot of parameters. The way that we can provide the vibration and the frequency, there's so many ways of doing so, but the impact that it has is significant. It's almost like also like looking to the auditorial, it's a frequency. And the frequency, the stimulation that can be provided, there are lots of things. One thing that I do want to mention is why is Charcot looking into vibration as to auditorial or like a visual cue or anything else? It is actually a lot to do with taking away other sensation. We want to be as least interrupting, as Heather mentioned, as possible. Because if you're looking into laser, you're actually like looking elsewhere. So you're not actually looking into where you're going or who you're talking to. When you're listening to something else, it's the same. It's taking away your auditory stimulation, sensation to something else. So we want to keep yourself, live your life, but it's providing that stimulation that can improve your movement. So it was very much of most pragmatic way of delivering stimulation that is a non-invasive and it doesn't interrupt and it is discrete.
So I'm thinking of the human body and there's multiple locations that can be stimulated, right? Why the sternum?
Great question. We actually tested a lot on different areas. And also we still tell people, please use try out in different places. Apart from some people who specifically have dystonia in, for example, their foot, who will actually use it on their foot, or some people who have tremors seem to try out on their arms whether a tremor exists. Most of them go back to sternum, and it correlates with what we're doing with our research because we saw the most benefit when people are wearing on the sternum. And then why is it sternum is another question. So there's two things. One is that more of usability. When people have freeze-up gait, and it's such a natural way of them being able to start operating the device, because if it's on the leg, they have to bend down. We don't want to do that. It's a very easy way of operating this device, but also it goes into actually sensory input. So as we age, what we've been discussing with our Parkinson's specialist is that their peripheral like nerve system starts getting less sensitive. You know, like where they say initially the hands and everywhere have a lot of sensory nerve system, but as we age, they get kind of much more dull, but actually the central part of the sternum actually has a lot of sensation. So delivering stimulation through that may be the reason why it's having the most benefit. So I think that was also another really, sorry.
It's okay. I interrupted you. You don't need to apologize. I find it interesting from an emergency response background, which is before Parkinson's, what I was involved in. And when people are on the edge of death, sometimes a sternal rub, a very hard stimulation to the sternum is what will arouse them. So it's interesting to me that that's the position that you chose because it's literally a life-saving technique.
Yes.
So another thing that I wanted to ask, within your research and development, you've obviously garnered a lot of data, and that's based on the frequencies, I'm assuming, of the people that you're working with. Is there any correlation? Because we're told this is a boutique disease, we're all different. But have you found any correlation between the frequencies of people with Parkinson's that you've been studying?
Sorry, can I ask what you mean by frequencies of?
You were talking of beta waves that the device detects. Are those beta waves? Is there any correlation between each person with Parkinson's disease? Are within the waves of our brain, are we still a boutique? Are there many different beta wave frequencies that you're detecting from people with Parkinson's?
That's a great question. Like what we are studying right now is that the not just beta oscillation, but also theta oscillation is a little bit interrupted for people with Parkinson's. Whether it differs from one subcategory of Parkinson's to the other, it's something that I need to study more. But there is one company that we started working together with who is specializing in brainwave. So I'm actually really excited to work together with them because we could be able to answer the questions like you have. So if you have questions, anything related with this, please shoot them our way so we can investigate more.
So if anybody out there has questions for you, where can they reach you?
Oh, there are multiple ways of reaching us. We've got a support email address and also info email address, but also we've got a clinical research interest as well. So please do get in touch. I do want to mention that we've got now, we're scaling up quite quickly and the waiting list is growing to like 16,000 now. We want to make sure that we answer everyone, but because our team is still very small, it is taking up time. But I just want to say that please send us questions or any comments. We will get that. There may be a little bit of delay, but we'll make sure that we get back to you.
You mentioned, I believe it helps with dystonia.
Does it help with the vocal effects of Parkinson's disease is what Mike's wondering as he's having vocal effects from Parkinson's disease.
Oh, thank you so much for that. We are actually seeing quite improvement with their voice, for example, slurring or also the loudness of the voice. We are yet to have more data onto that because we usually look into unified Parkinson's disease rating scale when we are doing evaluation of the Q1 device. Among that, there is speech, but it's a limited information because it's quite like, was it clear to hear them? But we want to do many, many more study into details of before and after. What I can say right now is that, yes, we are seeing potential, but we want to do much more in-depth study. But we are actually seeing some benefits.
So I want to mention another wild card question here. I see a naturopath who does acupuncture. And he often puts a small device on my sternum that has the sensation of a small puppy or a baby heartbeat. It's a little bit irregular. It's not a regular beat, but it really calms me down. I find my breathing better. I can focus better. And as I'm lying on that table, I have nothing else to do but sit there because I have needles in me. So I can't get up and wander around and distract myself. My phone is off. And it really is the idea of focus. However, there's a part of that that's keeping a part of my monkey mind busy so that my body can do its thing. So I'm wondering if that's exactly how part of this works. Am I being too rudimentary?
No, that's really great. I will take a look at the device more. It's interesting that it's irregular. Did you say it's irregular stimulation?
It almost feels like a small puppy's heartbeat where it would be a little bit sped up or something, like or a small infant, and it's just...
I actually want one now.
I do too. It's really cool.
But I have to say that our device gets a lot of comment from individuals saying that it feels like holding onto a cat purring in the chest because it does have that kind of sensation, Heather. So I don't know what the purpose of the device was created for, but that's actually what we are looking into. One thing is that it may be wellness device. What we did is that it's calibrated into specializing in Parkinson's because the frequency of the vibration often may feel the same, but actually is quite different. So yes, but the sensation that you will have is quite similar. The pattern is actually very, very important for us because it is talking about, as I mentioned earlier, about the stride length and also the gait. But yeah, I love it when people say that it feels like I'm just holding on to like a cat in the chest.
Yeah, what a relaxing feeling that is. It's like you're holding an infant or something. And it feels so, it's kind of epic. Like it's deeply human, which is interesting because you don't often pair a technology or technological device with something that feels so natural and human. It's pretty neat. It's just neat as a side effect. Thank you.
Are those natural vibrations that she's describing somehow giving us a reset and putting us back into a more natural state?
So that's a great question. We actually, in terms of how people are feeling, is also something that we would ask people, but more data that we have are more of the motor symptoms before and after. About how people are feeling, as mentioned, one of the things is the cat story, but also a lot to do of like calming, where they feel like they get more confident. It's something that they almost get emotionally attached as well. So those are the feedbacks that we've been getting. The side of the things that we kind of look into a bit more is, you know, the scientific kind of validation. But I think actually when Heather mentioned, I think we should pay attention more about how people are feeling by having the device. But it's quite incredible to see lots of people with Parkinson's who are using the device now create a little bag for it and a little house kind of. So they definitely are creating a lot of attachment to the device because, you know, it's something that they're wearing every day, every moment, and it's helping them. So, yeah, it's really great to see that.
So we're talking about making people feel better, and I'm watching you smile, and I know a little bit about your story. Can you tell us really the inspiration? What was the core symptom of Parkinson's that you were looking to affect?
Yes, it was definitely. It was like going back to the story of this gentleman saying that everyone thinks he's angry, although he's really happy. Like he was saying that I'm smiling inside. And that story really hit me because imagine he was saying that his wife thinks he's angry all the time and it's really upsetting him because he's actually really happy. So the misunderstanding that they were getting was what kind of really stayed with me. So Charcot's mission statement and our vision is to bring back smiles for people with Parkinson's. And we intentionally have this slogan for us because we are not just working on a device. We are working on the whole system. We are holding events. We support, for example, David's Fitness, Parkinson's Europe. We support people in any way possible because our goal is not developing a medical device. Our goal is to bring back smiles for people with Parkinson's.
I remember when I was a young kid going into a grocery store with my mom, and she would tell me, watch what happens. And she would just smile at people as we went. And I watched their vibrations change just from the smile. So even though you're making a device that changes vibrations, the effect of the device helping that smile then changes the vibrations of everybody that person with Parkinson's comes in contact with. So you're not only changing one person's life, you're changing everybody around them's life, right? How does this make you feel to have such a huge impact? Has it hit you yet, what you're doing?
It's a really interesting, and thank you for asking that question, because I did actually think about this. Our Charcot team members worked so hard, and I don't even have to say, like, guys, we have to work. They work so hard to the point that I have to tell them, like, guys, you have to sleep. But then they said, Lucy, you have to sleep first. And I think why does Charcot team members stay so motivated? It's actually because we have like 16,000 people. We've got 10 million people in the world that we can help and we can support. And it's the Q1 devices, the starting, there's actually a lot of things that technology can do right now and help people who need the support day to day. So I think I'm really grateful that I've been able to work with the community members and understand what this, the problems that we can help with. And also the team members that I work with, they're absolutely incredible. They say, like, is this going to be helpful for people with Parkinson's? Is it going to support them? But we also have this, no, we should do better all the time. We should get the device to them all the time. And we should do more research. We should find out more about what we can do. So I think I'm more grateful that I'm working in this sector, but also it's not like we are yet to be like kind of like we've done our job because there are so many more things that we can do. I really believe with the technology and with the right people, we'll be able to help people right now. If I can share one more story of a lady who I really kind of like, she's like my like kind of best friend. She really helped us to understand Parkinson's. It was actually YOPD community. And she mentioned to me one day saying, I really want to help the research because I know that in my like life, there is not going to be much help, but I want to help next generation. And I said, no. Like, we want to help you right now because there's so many things that we can do right now. So please don't feel that way. And then she lit up. And if you go to our community group of Facebook or so on, you can see that people say that we actually, Shaku made a hope for them, not because the device worked for them, but it's actually the fact that there are a lot of people at Shaku and people Shaku, around Shaku who is so dedicated to do something for people with Parkinson's. So I think that is what I really value a lot. And yeah, once again, like every time I hear this story of someone saying it really transformed my life or someone's life, I just feel like, yes, this is the thing. We need to do more. We have to get the device to people as soon as possible, and we need to do more. So I think that's how I feel.
I love it. One of the great friends of this show is Kabugo Hannington. And what I see is a non-medicinal intervention into Africa that is practical, that is applicable, and that is cheap enough that we can do it. So for him and every single person that he works with, thank you. Because what I see is in the future, people walking around Uganda who would have been struggling, having your device on their chest and doing well. So thank you for doing this.
Oh, it's the beginning. I really want to mention that this is the beginning. We are taking baby steps, but I think like in 3 days, it is Shaku's anniversary. Team members went through a lot. The community, like including yourselves, really inspire us and also motivate us. So bear with us. We will study more and we will do our best to improve the quality of life for people with Parkinson's and also people around them.
And just for our listeners, how big is the device? Can you describe it for someone who can't?
It's actually like a size of a coin. It's like a 4 centimeters in diameter. So it is actually, everyone says it's actually smaller than they thought.
Wow, wonderful. Thank you.
How cost effective for a person with Parkinson's is this intervention going to be, do you think?
The cost effective?
Yeah, is it going to be expensive? Are we going to have to pay $300 a month to continue this treatment?
No. So at the moment, the device is actually like the full cost of the device is a retail price of £295, and they got the device. They can get the adhesives, but the reason why we made it cheap is because right now we are working towards to the reimbursement to get the device through NHS to the Medicare and the Medicaid so that you get it for free. And so we are working on all health economic analysis, working together with the managers of the hospital's insurers so that you get it for free, because the device is not good to have, it's a must have. So that's why for now, while we work on the insurers and everything, we are going to keep the price low so that everyone can get it, yeah.
Are the pharmaceutical companies going to be shooting at you from every grassy knoll, or are you working with them?
I wouldn't say so. not at all, because we are actually seeing an additive effectiveness of the medications as well. So that is actually an important part. Like we say to individuals that they have to talk with the clinicians, we actually advise to not change their usual medical medication regime, because it is very important that they don't suddenly change their rhythm. So I do not believe so. We actually talk a lot with every stakeholders around Parkinson's, so we understand the system more, and we're not trying to interrupt anything. We're trying to support, and where there is a gap, we're trying to fill in together.
Right. This might be epic for off times then. It's not a replacement, but it's just an additional support. Thank you
exactly.
So much.
There were probably boardrooms and pharma companies for years sitting around thinking, how can we make our medication better? And then Lucy came along.
I have to say that not at all. I actually had a discussion recently with one of the pharmaceuticals where they are making Parkinson's medication, and we actually had a great discussion because they also are working on lots of innovative like medication. For example, when they start taking medication early on, medications that can help when you start really early on, but they are struggling because the early diagnosis are important. Early diagnosis may be helpful by working together with a medical device company like ourselves. So there is actually, I really want to mention that there are a lot of great research going on. I know it has been a very long time since, you know, L-DOPA was made, that there was like and DBS, that there was a significant excitement going on. But I think right now there are lots of incredible projects, incredible people really seeing the importance of supporting people with Parkinson's. So I'm quite like really hopeful, and I've been really enjoying like recent involvement between technology, engineers, you know, the device development and the clinicians and so on. Yes.
What about ataxia, MS? I know MS isn't specific to the same type of movement symptom disorder, but ataxia, or maybe early multiple system atrophy or earlier versions of other. So it's not just Parkinson's, right?
So we are actually, thank you for that question. So you probably saw the Cambridge University news of the devices are currently being investigated in the hospital. Is actually, we are looking into, is there anything else? We're looking into the pathology of the Parkinson's. Is there any other conditions that it can also support with because of its non-invasivity, and also the impact that it has is significant if you consider the risk. So at the moment, we are doing a lot of study. Yes, stroke is also one of the things that we saw in the literature. Multiple sclerosis also had a benefit by providing focal stimulation. We have to look into it much more because, as we said, we are very research focused because we really don't want to give false hope. I think that's the worst thing that you can do to people with long-term condition. So we are really looking into a lot of aspects, and we will be cautious, we will be careful, and we will make sure that we share the studies with you. And transparency, authentic kind of approach is Xiaohu's kind of key character.
So, 고맙습니다 for joining us. And
감사합니다.
This has been great. You're a very, very, very interesting and inspiring person. So thank you so much for your work and for joining us today.
We will continue to do more research, and we will constantly share what we're doing. We do have open day for those who are interested in just seeing our progress. Every month, we just invite everyone so that you can ask questions. And everyone says that's quite of a brave move, but it's because we want to tell you what we're doing, how many devices we are, what we're making, how many research that we're going on. So if you're interested, it's on our website. Every month, we have an open day so that we can update you and answer any questions. So please do join. And Michael, we will also look into speech more and more. And we will hopefully, like next day or like in a couple of months, we come back to the show, and then we can share with you about the results that we're seeing.
That'll do it for this episode, folks. Come back next time for more inspiring guests. Thanks for listening. Have a great night, everybody.